One morning in July 2001, news of an immigrant Filipino family getting massacred in Australia sent shockwaves across the country. Many felt sorry for the lone survivor, the 20-year-old son who was shown on the news crying and gave a beautiful eulogy during the funeral days later. But a few months afterward, sympathy turned into horror when authorities became more certain that it was actually this young man who had viciously killed both his parents and his sister. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify with new episodes out every week. This is the story of the Gonzalez family, composed of Benguet natives Teddy and Mary, who along with their teenage daughter Claudine were murdered by their very own son, Seth. Listener discretion is advised due to the graphic nature of this story. Hailing from Baguio City in Benguet, Teodoro Gonzalez, or Teddy, was a lawyer who belonged to an affluent and influential family. He was a graduate of the Baguio College's Foundation College of Law, where he taught law classes in his spare time as a way to give back to the community. In 1977, he married a local woman named Mary Loiva Josephine Claridades, the eldest of six, who, like Teddy, was from a devout Catholic family. On September 16, 1980, the couple welcomed their first child, a boy they christened Seth, as Teddy believed the name to be unique. 2 years later, on July 9, 1982, the couple's second child was born, a daughter they named Claudine. By then, Teddy and Mary had invested their hard-earned savings into various businesses, one of which was the newly built 40-room Queen Victoria Hotel along LaGuardia Road. This was an incredibly successful venture given Baguio's reputation as the summer capital of the Philippines that made the city one of the top tourist destinations in the country. The Gonzalez family enjoyed a luxurious lifestyle in their hometown, where they were always surrounded by their relatives. But all that changed on July 16, 1990, when a 7.8 magnitude earthquake struck the island of Luzon, damaging properties, leaving thousands homeless, and claiming the lives of more than 1,600 people. Baguio City was among the hardest hit areas where over 28 buildings collapsed, and among them was the Gonzalez family's Queen Victoria Hotel. When the earthquake struck, Teddy, Mary, and Claudine, along with the hotel guests, managed to escape the building. Seth, however, wasn't as fortunate. His leg got trapped under heavy debris while he was fleeing down the stairway. Unable to move, the 10-year-old boy cried out to his father, who upon hearing Seth, rushed back into the crumbling hotel and managed to squeeze himself through a crack to pull out his son. Teddy tore a ligament in the process, an injury that would cause him to suffer from chronic pain for the rest of his life. Facing the loss of the hotel and the prospect of being unable to support his family, Teddy became depressed in the weeks following the earthquake. When he confessed to his wife that he was slowly losing faith in God, the fiercely devout Mary decided that it was time for them to leave the past behind and move on elsewhere. She managed to convince her husband to emigrate from the Philippines, and in 1991, the family of four arrived in Sydney, Australia, where they settled in a small suburb called Blacktown. There, Teddy established a law practice that specialized in immigration, with Mary helping to run the office, and together they managed to carve out for themselves a middle-class life in Australia. The Gonzalez's went to church regularly, with Teddy and Mary attending morning mass 3 times a week at St. Michael's Church, and the whole family praying together on Sundays. While the couple worked hard to create a loving and stable environment for their family, they were at the same time typical tiger parents who demanded great things from their children. They enrolled their kids in prestigious Roman Catholic schools, Claudine in Loreto Kirribilli, a school exclusively for girls, and Seth in Parramatta Marist High School, a school exclusively for boys. Claudine did considerably well for herself, but Seth's performance in school displeased Teddy, who couldn't understand why his son hadn't inherited his academic brilliance. Wanting to earn his father's approval, Seth began stretching the truth to cover up his poor grades. At the age of 14, he went as far as to plagiarize the song Take Me Out of the Dark by Filipino singer Gary Valenciano, submitting it to his 8th-year class as a poem he had supposedly written himself. After Seth graduated from high school, Teddy and Mary urged him to give up his dreams of becoming a musician in favor of a more lucrative career as a heart surgeon. But Seth's grades hadn't been good enough to earn him a spot at the University of New South Wales Medical School, and he was instead forced to take a bridging course to fulfill its strict requirements. The pressure, though, proved to be too much for him to handle, and he decided to drop out after 2 years. Disappointed but still harboring high hopes for his son, Teddy encouraged Seth to take up law instead so he may inherit the family business someday. With his parents' support, he enrolled in a pre-law course at Macquarie University, but when he was unable to meet the course's required grades, he was told by the faculty that he was facing expulsion. And in yet another act of deception, he falsified his grades to keep his parents from finding out the truth. In 1999, the Gonzalez's moved to a two-story brick veneer house they bought at No. 6 Collins Street in North Ryde, New South Wales. There, they hosted family get-togethers where Teddy and Mary often bragged about their children's academic performances, though they usually only mentioned Seth's grades in passing, since they weren't high enough to earn praise from their relatives. While Seth and Claudine felt pressured by their parents' high expectations, they initially strived to meet all of these. Teddy and Mary, however, weren't just particular with their grades. The couple kept a close watch on their relationships as well, so much so that when Claudine's boyfriend, whom Mary already disapproved of, was revealed to be unemployed, Claudine was pulled out of her current school and sent to Melbourne to finish her high school education. Teddy and Mary also disliked Seth's girlfriend and even threatened to disinherit him if he continued to see her. Seth initially refused, but his girlfriend herself decided to end their relationship to avoid causing a rift between him and his parents. The breakup led to Seth performing even more poorly in school, and when his parents found out about his failing grades through his own sister Claudine, they threatened to take away his allowance and his prized car, a green Ford Festiva. This pushed Seth over the edge, and he could only see one way out. On July 1, 2001, Seth typed into a search engine the phrase methods of killing and learned about a certain type of bean reportedly so poisonous it could kill a person within 3 days and leave no obvious trace behind. Believing this to be his best option, he placed 3 separate orders from a website in the US and from a company based in Byron Bay, Australia. Seth told both sellers that he needed the beans urgently and even included an express post envelope for them to use. To cover up his tracks, he sent a letter to a major food company, accusing them of selling contaminated products. He also sent similar letters to the Australian Quarantine Inspection Service and the Australian Federal Police, pretending to be an anonymous whistleblower from the food company who wanted to report that their products had been sabotaged and were not fit to be consumed. Upon receiving his first 2 orders of beans, Seth put his plan into action by mixing them into his 43-year-old mother's food. Instead of killing her though, Mary only suffered from food poisoning and was just hospitalized for a short time. This made Seth realize that his plan to poison his family would never work, so he decided to take more drastic measures. On July 10, 2001, at about 4:30 p.m., after returning from his family's law firm in Blacktown, where he worked part-time as a paralegal, Seth entered Claudine's bedroom, armed with a baseball bat and 2 kitchen knives. He tried to strangle his 18-year-old sister who was studying at her desk, but when this failed, he beat her head with the bat at least 6 times and stabbed her with a knife 2 times on her stomach and 5 times on her neck. An hour later, Seth attacked his mother who had just arrived home from the office. He stabbed Mary 2 times on her face, neck, chest, and abdomen, and he also slashed her windpipe, severing it completely. As Mary lay on the living room floor in a pool of her own blood, Seth waited by the front doorway for his 46-year-old father who walked in at around 6:50 p.m. Seth immediately stabbed him in the neck, chest, and stomach. In an attack so vicious, one of his strikes managed to partially sever his father's spinal cord. After killing his entire family, Seth spray-painted the words "Fuck off Asians, KKK" in blue on their living room wall, hoping to mislead authorities. He then left the house to dispose of the clothes and size 7 running shoes he was wearing and the 2 kitchen knives he had used. Knowing that he had to have a solid alibi, Seth had earlier arranged an 8 p.m. meeting with a friend named Sam Desilio who lived a few blocks away. As the two boys drove to the city, ate at Planet Hollywood, and went to a video game arcade, Seth told Desilio that he had spent the entire afternoon aimlessly driving around town. Desilio was dropped off at his house at around 11:30 p.m., and Seth himself returned home at around 11:45, acting as if he had just discovered the crime scene. He called 000, which is Australia's 911, and yelled that his entire family had been killed, while his neighbor Shane Hanley also contacted the police. Authorities arrived just after midnight and found Seth huddled with a few neighbors. Upon seeing the spray-painted words on the wall, they initially believed it was a hate crime, and Seth told them that prior to the massacre, his family had an altercation with people tailgating their car. He told the police about his discovery, claiming that when he saw the bodies and heard a noise downstairs, he ran after one or two men down a nearby street to no avail. He also said that he hugged the bodies of his parents and tried to resuscitate them while waiting for the ambulance to arrive, and even made attempts to stop the flow of gushing blood from one of Claudine's wounds. A few days after the massacre, Seth made a tearful appeal on the news, begging for the killer to come forward and even offering a $100,000 reward for any information that could lead to an arrest. The funeral for the Gonzalez family was held a few days afterward at the nearby Holy Spirit Catholic Church. After eulogies from relatives of Seth's mother Mary and his sister Claudine, the 20-year-old Seth stood at the lectern facing his family's flower-adorned coffins. In his eulogy for his father, Seth said that Teddy had told him his was the first ever such name in the world, and he would reveal its secret meaning to him when he turned 21. He continued, quote, "I will turn 21 on September this year. I will never find out the meaning of my name because it was taken away along with my father. That part of me will always be incomplete, along with many other parts of my life that only Papa can fill," end quote. After a few more words, Seth closed his eyes, took a deep breath, and sang the R&B ballad One Sweet Day by Mariah Carey and Boyz II Men. Police who were in attendance noticed an emotional detachment in Seth, and though he wasn't initially a suspect, they started putting together a few suspicious things about him and his story. They'd noticed when they first met him that there was barely any blood on him, with only fine smears of blood on the soles of his shoes and on his pants. This didn't line up with what Seth had told them about hugging the bodies of his family, though when questioned further, he had said that the blood had washed off in the drizzling rain. His claim of trying to stop the blood gushing from one of Claudine's wounds also showed inconsistencies in his story, since his sister's blood should no longer be gushing if she was already dead when he found her. Postmortem findings also revealed that the Gonzalez's had died over a 3-hour period, which belied the initial police theory of a robbery gone wrong or racist hate killing, as perpetrators of such crimes wouldn't have hung around at the crime scene for that long. The Gonzalez residence additionally had no signs of forced entry, and though there was superficial ransacking, there was nothing valuable missing. A shoebox in Seth's room matched the shoes used in the attack, and his jumper on the night of the massacre was also found to have the same blue paint used on the wall. With all of these as basis, police searched his internet records and got permission to record his phone calls, and an undercover police officer befriended him and monitored his activities. Strike Force Tawas, the task force created to track down the perpetrator of the massacre, saw additional red flags in Seth's behavior in the months after the crime. They discovered that Seth had reached out to his father's accountant to ask about his inheritance a mere 3 days after the murders. Upon learning that he stood to gain more than $1 million from the family estate, Seth went on a spending spree, going out clubbing, moving into an expensive luxury apartment in Chatswood, Sydney, and putting down deposits on a Porsche and Lexus. When asked how he would be paying the full amount for the cars, Seth told the dealers that he was expecting a large inheritance soon. Going against his grandmother's wishes, Seth also sold the 2 cars belonging to his parents and tried to pawn off his mother's jewelry. When he was told that Gonzalez's family affairs in the Philippines were being handled by his aunt Annie Rose Paraan, he began to regularly send her emails asking for huge sums of money, even creating false death certificates on a computer to hasten the process. In December 2001, investigators disproved Seth's alibi via 2 witness statements. One of Teddy Gonzalez's business clients had dropped documents in the letterbox of the Gonzalez residence at around 4:30 p.m. on the night of the massacre, and Seth's aunt Emily Luna had rung the doorbell thrice at around 6:05 p.m. Both Teddy's client and Luna saw a green Ford Festiva in the carport with Seth's distinctive license plate number SEF80G, which contradicted Seth's alibi that he had been driving around town before he met his friend Sam DeCilia. Luna also noticed that the house was dark and quiet, which was unusual given that at least Teddy or Mary should already be home by then, and the family kept 6 small dogs inside. Seth explained this away, saying that Dacilia had texted him about being late, so after coming from his father's law office, Seth stopped by the house but didn't go inside. He then supposedly drove to Kingsgrove, around 20 kilometers or 12 miles away, to meet another friend named Raf De Leon, but he couldn't find his address, so he returned home and sat in his car while waiting for his 8 p.m. plan with Dacilio. In January 2002, Seth told police another alibi to explain why his car was there at the house. He claimed to have left it there to take a taxi to a brothel in Chatswood, and he had hidden this from investigators because he didn't want his extended family to know that he had been with a sex worker. Seth even presented a signed statement from the taxi driver who drove him. It didn't take long for authorities to discredit his second alibi, as the taxi driver admitted that Seth had paid him to lie, and the brothel worker that Seth had supposedly been with couldn't vouch for him, as she was away on vacation on the week of the murders. Seth fabricated emails which he handed to detectives, with one email claiming that a wealthy Filipino businessman had been behind the deaths of his family, and it further stated that Seth should lie low and search through his father's business records. But interviews with Seth's friends revealed that he was a prolific liar, and among the many other fake stories he had told were that he had cancer and was dying, that he was training for the Olympics, that he had a black belt in Taekwondo, and that he was offered a record deal after a producer heard him sing during his family's funeral. A breakthrough in the case came when Seth's fingerprints were found on the product poisoning letters he had sent, which matched the address searches on his computer and coincided with his online research into poisons. With this mountain of evidence, Seth was arrested on June 13, 2002 at his plush apartment in Chatswood, and he was charged with 3 counts of murder, as well as 1 count of threatening product contamination. He was refused bail, and access to his inheritance was put on hold by his paternal grandparents in the Philippines, which forced Seth to rely on legal aid to pay his defense attorney. Seth pleaded not guilty to all charges on the grounds of mental illness, and his trial began 2 years later in April 2004. The prosecution argued that he had planned the massacre in advance, and the court heard all the lies he had told about his whereabouts at the time of the crime. On May 20, 2004, almost 3 years after the murders, Seth Gonzalez was found guilty of all 4 charges against him. Justice Bruce James concluded that there were no mitigating circumstances to his crimes, and Seth committed them in a calculating and premeditated manner, motivated by greed and a desire to maintain a certain lifestyle. James added that there was a risk that Seth could reoffend, particularly since he was still protesting his innocence and continued to show no signs of remorse. 4 months later, on September 17, a day after his 24th birthday, Seth was sentenced to 3 concurrent life sentences without the possibility of parole. He tried to appeal his sentence, saying that the statements he had given to the police at the crime scene should have been inadmissible in trial. His lawyers further argued that police errors and the questions that the prosecution asked Seth during the trial had resulted in a miscarriage of justice. Seth's appeal was denied in 2007, and 2 separate special inquiries into his convictions were also denied in 2018 and 2019. In March 2021, his 3rd attempt at a special inquiry was dismissed by the New South Wales Supreme Court, with Justice Des Fagan stating that there were no special facts or circumstances that would justify the taking of further action. A few months later, in May 2021, Seth applied for a royal pardon from the New South Wales Attorney General, hoping to be freed from prison just in time to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the massacre. In a 20-page document titled Miscarriage of Justice in the Case of Seth Gonzalez, Seth maintained his innocence and argued against several pieces of evidence that were used to convict him, such as the paint found on his clothes not being enough in his opinion to prove he wrote the racist message on their living room wall. The document also claimed that Seth's family was murdered by one of his father's political enemies, and noted that Teddy had worked as a lawyer and public servant in the Philippines, and was openly critical of former President Ferdinand Marcos, who was the country's dictator back then. The political rival mentioned in the document, however, had already passed away. The Gonzalez family residence at 6 Collins Street, North Ryde, was put on the market after the massacre, but remained unsold for 3 years due to the property's notoriety. It aroused controversy after getting sold in October 2004, when the buyers only found out through a newspaper about the murders that took place on the property. Because of the incident, the New South Wales government moved to tighten disclosure laws for real estate agents, making it illegal not to disclose information that could substantially impact the value of any property. In November 2005, the house was finally sold for $720,000 Australian dollars, $80,000 less than the previous price, to a buyer who was rightfully informed of its history. There's no new information released to the public as of this recording regarding Seth Gonzalez's application for a royal pardon. He remains locked up at the Lithgow Correctional Center in Merangaroo, Australia, where if he isn't pardoned, he would spend the rest of his natural life imprisoned. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. This story was co-written by Kayla De Leon and was narrated and produced by me, Derek. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. Stay tuned next week for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.